dodges. I ride in this wind on my good horse. I call you my shiny black bears to the playhouse of fortune to take the bright silver and gold you have taken from somebody.
You're tuned to WEOS Geneva or WXXE Fenner, Syracuse. This is Unwelcome Guests. I'm Lynn Gary. On April 4th, NPR host Terry Gross interviewed journalist Mark Bowden, whose cover story on Saddam Hussein, Tales of the Tyrant, appears in the current Atlantic Monthly. Bowden related the tale of an Iraqi exile who had been forced to witness the hanging of his co-workers, government bureaucrats who had been convicted of taking bribes. Citing this incident, Bowden described Iraqi society as casually sadistic. Then, he related the following theory. Here's a clip from the program.
It remains Iraq does a very tribal society. And, you know, I think Saddam, one of the more interesting facets of the piece is this explanation that I was given by my friend Al-Bazaz, the editor in London, of the difference between what he calls tribal mentality and city or town mentality, and how Saddam typifies tribal mentality. I think that that analogy, to understand what's happening in Iraq, to understand how Saddam has become as powerful as he is, has, I think, much broader implications in the world. I think those of us, for instance, in the West, fall into the category of town mentality. You know, we live in a society of laws. We believe that the ultimate good is peaceful coexistence. We believe in the need for compromise. Saddam comes from a world where what Al-Bazaz calls tribal or village mentality, where power exists for its own sake, and you don't cooperate or compromise with your enemies, you defeat them, and you frighten them to the extent that they are willing to put up with your oppression.
The interview from which the preceding clip was taken conveys an impression that echoes the present Bush administration spin, that the so-called war on terrorism is one of civilized people against the barbaric and brutal, and must be supported for this reason. If this is the basis for U.S. military action, why none against ally Saudi Arabia, which was the home of most of the people actually involved in the September 11th hijack bombings? The Saudi government has women stoned to death for having sex with men with whom they are not married. Isn't that at least equally sadistic to Bowden's Iraqi example? When examining the U.S. government's actions and alliances, it becomes plain that neither civilization nor sadism are at issue. Natural resources and corporate profits are the issue, and evidently no amount of sadism is too much where protecting those profits is at stake. Tonight, I'll look at oil, repression, and resistance. We'll begin with a documentary from St. Cloud, Minnesota, on what has come to be called the School for Assassins, funded by taxpayer dollars and located at a U.S. Army installation at Fort Benning, Georgia.
This program focuses on the functions of the School of the Americas, located in Fort Benning, Georgia, and how it, in relation to U.S. foreign policy, aids in the perpetuation, violence, racial hatred, and class separation throughout Latin America. My guests for this program include Sister Merle Noldy, coordinator for the Pax Christi, local activist and student Rachel Castor, and the outreach director for the School of the Americas Watch in Washington, D.C., Eric LeCompte. The School of the Americas' primary function is to train Latin American soldiers and police counterinsurgency and combat techniques. The School of the Americas began in 1946 in Panama and was moved to Georgia in 1984, and since its opening, the trainees have been tied to some of the most horrific cases of human rights abuses in all of Latin America. Its upper-level trainees include Hugo Banzer Suarez of Bolivia, Manuel Noriega, and Omar Torrijos of Panama. Juan Velasco Alvarado of Peru, and many other Latin American dictators who are notorious for human rights abuses while they were in power. More than 60,000 soldiers and police officers from almost every country in Latin America have been trained at the school. Many times when officers have been cited for atrocious human rights abuses, the majority involved are graduates of the School of the Americas. Some of the most appalling cases include the death of Archbishop Oscar Romero, who worked with the poor communities in El Salvador. Two of the three officers cited in the assassination were graduates of the school. Three of five officers cited in the rape and murder of four U.S. churchwomen. 10 of 12 cited for the El Mazote massacre of 900 civilians were graduates of the U.S. Army School of the Americas. The list goes on, and yet there are many more cases that haven't been documented because oftentimes the military has so much control that investigations don't take place as a result of intimidation, and when they do, they may end in assassination. Soldiers sent to the School of the Americas to receive training take courses in counterinsurgency, which is meant to be used against aggressors and terrorists. Instead, the techniques are used against the poor in Latin America. As corrupt governments nationalize lands owned by peasant subsistence farmers, they're often left without a home and a means to obtain food. When these farmers and peasants organize to share ideas and initiatives to obtain land from the government, they are often killed in large groups, many times an entire village. It is mainly this reason that the school is being called the School of the Assassins. The School of the Americas was renamed the Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation on January 17th of 2001. Although it appears that the school has been reformed, the same military training techniques are still being taught. This is simply another futile attempt by government and military leaders of deterring thought with the carefully chosen language imposed. Last year, the now late Georgia senator and School of the Americas supporter was quoted as saying the change was purely cosmetic, and that it was proposed so that the school could continue its mission and operation. It was for these reasons that the School of the Americas Watch was created, first in Georgia and now mainly in Washington, D.C., but local watch groups have been rising up in many states across the United States in the past decade. Eric LeCompte, Outreach Director for the School of the Americas Watch in Washington, D.C., tells us more about the organization.
The School of the Americas Watch is an independent organization that seeks to close down the institution known as the School of the Americas. We do this through lobbying efforts as well as educating people across the country through the mass media, as well as a nonviolent direct action campaign that's focused on closing the School of Terror. The School of the Americas began in 1946. Right now, the school is located at Fort Benning, Georgia, and troops come from all over Latin America, from Bolivia, from El Salvador, from Nicaragua, to come to the United States, to Fort Benning, where they receive training at the School of the Americas in commando tactics, military intelligence, psychological operations, as well as advanced arms training. Then these soldiers have gone back to their home countries, and they've used these skills in El Salvador and Mexico to literally wage war against their own people. They've massacred entire villages, disappeared thousands of people, and forced hundreds of thousands to flee their countries. SOA graduates have targeted grassroots leaders for assassination, torture, rape, and intimidation. And we found that these graduates of the School of the Americas located at Fort Benning, Georgia, that these graduates have especially targeted religious workers and religious leaders, student leaders, and union organizers. Evidently, the school's mission is really to silence these leaders and those who organize for the rights of working people and the poor throughout Latin America. So we at the School of the Americas Watch don't believe that this is an appropriate expenditure. We don't believe that it's the proper way to be spending our tax dollars to essentially teach soldiers from Latin America how to torture and wage war against their own people. And so for the past 10 years, we've been working to close down this school of torture, this school of terror. And we've built a movement of tens of thousands of people across the country since 1990.
Do you believe the goal of closing the school and an investigation into its practices are far from becoming a reality?
Well, I believe that we're closer than ever to closing down this school of terror in our own backyard. In 1989, there was a terrible massacre that took place in El Salvador. 14-year-old Selena Ramos, her mother, and six Jesuit priests were assassinated by an El Salvadoran death squad. And in 1990, a Congressional Truth Commission went down to El Salvador, led by Congressman Joseph Moakley. And what they found were these people, this 14-year-old Selena Ramos, her mother, and six Jesuit priests, that those responsible for their murders were trained at the U.S. Army School of the Americas in Fort Benning, Georgia. That those responsible had taken a commando tactics course and it had been paid for with our tax money. And so in 1990, what happened was people began to go down to the gates of Fort Benning and fast and vigil and start to call attention. In 1990, what began as a movement of literally 13 people now is a movement of tens of thousands of people. Every year, every November, to commemorate the anniversary of the terrible murder of Selena Ramos, her mother, and the Jesuit priests, every November people have returned to Fort Benning to say, we cannot spend our tax money like this. Terror should stop, and we should not be involved in the training of terrorists. So consistently, year after year, more and more people have come. Until this past November, we had close to 15,000 people at the gates of Fort Benning. Right now, we have a bill in Congress, H.R. 1810, which is continuing to gather co-sponsors. Right now, it has well over 100 co-sponsors in the House of Representatives. Congress people calling for this school of terror to be closed, and every few days we're finding more co-sponsors, more Congress people who are interested in working to close this school of terror. So we really believe that we're closer than ever, but we still have some serious work ahead. Right now we're working to introduce a bill in the Senate, and we believe that one of the people who's going to be instrumental in introducing that bill will be Senator Wellstone from Minnesota. So in a very specific way, we would ask people from Minnesota really to call on Senator Wellstone to introduce this important human rights bill into the Senate. So we find that our movement continues to build momentum, that continually in the mainstream media, more word gets out of this terror training done in our names down at the School of the Americas at Fort Benning, Georgia. So we believe that we're getting closer and closer to closing the school. As a matter of fact, our efforts have been so successful that our grassroots movement, as well as pressure from Congress, forced the Pentagon to change the name of the school last year from the School of the Americas to the Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation. And that was really a great victory. Although the training really hasn't changed, it's still taking place in the same place. The same type of terror training is offered at the school. But it really illustrates the power of a grassroots movement here in the United States, that it really forced the Pentagon to do something it had previously refused to do, and that was to change the name of the school and make it seem as if the name change was in fact a closure of the school. But even in spite of that, the movement has grown and momentum continues to close the School of Terror.
The growing movement is evident every November with the gathering of thousands of supporters who are for closing the school. Every year, caring individuals who are critical of the United States' corporate interest-based foreign policy gather at the gates of Fort Benning to demonstrate and raise awareness of the terrible atrocities going on every day in Latin America. Some are even caring enough to sacrifice their freedom. 117 people were arrested for delivering coffins, crosses, and indictments to the school. Their nonviolent acts were considered sacrifices to aid in raising awareness about the school. Sister Merle Noldy is one of those involved.
I've been working in the area of peace and justice half and full time for about the last 15 years. I'm actually the coordinator of the local Pax Christi chapter. That, in terms of position, that's the one I would claim probably.
Can you tell us a bit about your visit to Fort Benning this past November?
Well, I was thinking about that in terms of I've been there four times. They have always been a really very peaceful experience and basically friendly. You have the sense of a community of people coming together who don't necessarily know one another, but yet can really respond and bond with one another rather comfortably in a short period of time. This year, one of the things that I thought was especially effective, I guess, and beautiful, was that they had a large involvement of puppets, large puppets, with the names of the who represented peoples from different countries. So you had these black faces and Native American faces, brown faces. And so that the sense, and they were an important part of the rally, both on Saturday and Sunday. And then the other thing that they did was to create the, with the help of puppets, the sense of can there be an alternative vision, an alternative community, because of the security concern on the part of the government. And the gates were basically closed. The fort was basically closed by the building of a chain fence that could not easily be passed. In the past, we've been able to walk onto the fort. You know, maybe, well, in some years it was like 2,200 people who crossed that line of trespassing and were then whisked off in buses or whatever. But this year, that was not possible. Some people did risk arrest in different kinds of ways. I think some 86 people were arrested. But most of us then were in this funeral. It's what's involved is a funeral procession, symbolic funeral procession, that ordinarily would cross onto the fort. And this time it just went up to the gates, and then we came back came away from it in another line. But by the time I was quite far back in the line, and by the time our group got to the fence, it had become like a Vietnam wall covered with crosses. Many of the people in the lines are carrying crosses with names of the victims of the School of the Americas. There were flowers and these white crosses and different pins that people were wearing. The whole wall, that whole fence was covered. So that was, in a sense, a very unique part of the experience this past year. Especially, I think it would be especially meaningful for people who had experienced the Vietnam Wall, because this was became a memorial wall for many victims of the School of the Americas. I think many people, prior to the development of this particular action for change, were already committed to social justice. Achieving social justice, working for peace. I think that, you know, many, well, the participants in the witness at Fort Benning had a great spread age-wise. Some people came with their small children, and then there were a lot of college age folks, and then a large people, senior citizens like myself. So there's a good age spread in the witness. So experiences differ in terms of how long people have been concerned about issues of justice. For my age group, probably I would think many of my age group had a prior commitment to working for social change on other issues, in civil rights issues, for example, and women's issues, economic justice, living wage for folks, and those kinds of things. So for that group of people, it was, you know, like here, a growing awareness of our relationship to other countries and what's happening in our world.
Has the number of supporters been increasing over the past few years?
The number of people coming certainly has been growing. One of those years I went, I stood next to a man, probably in his 60s, and we got into a conversation. And what was remarkable, I think we were probably 10,000 people by that time. And what was remarkable for me to hear his story was that he had been there, I forget the year this witness began, but he had been there at the very beginning, went from every week, I think it was, people gathered, a handful of people gathered outside of the School of the Americas. And here this movement had grown so that 10,000 people were there, people from all around the country. So I think it's kind of a testimony to the efforts to raise consciousness on the part of the people who work with the School of the Americas Watch, that enough people understand it to not only write letters to their congressmen and those kinds of things, but to come together to say in a much larger way that we think this school should close, that it's as a symbol of our, it's connected with our foreign policy, and we definitely need a change to have that based on a more human rights kind of perspective.
Do you believe that the involvement of the church has helped to gain attention of legislators and make progress toward closing the school?
Well, I think the whole movement certainly has had influenced legislators.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that there was 10 votes short in the last effort to close pass legislation says that many legislators have come to know, to agree with the position that it should be closed. And I don't think that happened in a vacuum. I think that happened because their constituents were involved. And not only were they involved, but they wrote, visited, communicated with them. Maybe some of them were in jail, went to prison. That it does seem that when a person goes to prison, that person's local community, there's a lot of consciousness raising that goes on in the local community because of that action and, the courage and willingness to spend time in prison because of your convictions about this school. Sister of St. Joseph and St. Paul, who I think maybe 3 years ago, she was one of Minnesota persons who also spent 6 months in prison. And the kind of coverage of that, she gave a lot of talks before she went to prison. We sponsored her at St. Benedict's, but we scheduled it for our monastery dining room. And we had it was a crowded audience who came to hear her story before she went to prison. She was, she was going to go to prison. She had been sentenced. And then there's time in between that sentencing and going. And so a lot of people on our campus came to be aware of at least one person's perception of that school through her. And I know she gave many talks, and there were several stories in the different papers in the Twin Cities and coverage with, through TV. So those are means of educating and raising consciousness.
When did you first become heavily involved with issues in Latin America?
For me, the whole thing of Central America really became alive with the assassination of Oscar Romero in El Salvador. I was working in Chicago. The group I was working with was Women Religious, and we had supported him prior to that time. His kind of witness in this situation in El Salvador was so admirable that at a national meeting we had a resolution of some kind of, I don't know how we formulated that, but we had communicated with him in terms of supporting him. And so his death shocked everyone. But I guess even more beyond that, a year later, when four North American women, three of whom were women religious and the other was a lay missionary from Cleveland, when they were murdered, that was the first time, I think, that I took to the streets. But I was working in a group with a group whose focus was social justice, especially for women and children. So it wasn't as though it was an issue that broadened. It was another place to act for justice. I had been writing letters and all those kinds of things prior to going to Fort Benning. But it did seem that it was important to become one more person to show up at this event to bring about a close of the school. It's our foreign policy that we have to look at. It's a kind of a question, I think. It relates to the kinds of questions we should be asking ourselves as to why terrorists, why people hate us, and why a movement of terrorism can grow against us. The many specific kinds of situations that are involved, that we're as citizens of a democracy complicit in, if we don't question them. those are things I would, you know, really like to communicate, that this particular issue is connected with a bigger question that every person in our country should be informed about, so they can decide one way or the other what they will support.
Rachel Castor also made the trip to Fort Benning this past November. She is going to tell us a bit about her experience.
This year was a little different because there was a big fence up, and so we were able to talk to some of the police and officials in a different way than we could in past years. So there was a really interesting conversation that went on between the protesters on one side of the fence, this chain link fence, and then some military police and a colonel from the School of the Americas on the other side of the fence, and even some other military personnel. And they were really civil, and both sides were, and had a really interesting conversation just about tactics and about what the school was about and whether it did promote democracy or not. So I was really excited this year to see that happen, because in past years it's been more like the police are there to, like, the military police are there to arrest us, and that's really the only interaction that we have with them. I was really impressed this year with the creativity that went on. There was After the puppet show, the big street theater that they did with all these cardboard puppets and this amazing street theater that they put on, they took the cardboard and they made it into what they called a global village. And these were just protesters. They took the cardboard and made a cardboard city, basically, right outside the gates of Fort Benning, and invited everyone over to sit and to paint. And they painted roses over everything, and they painted peace signs, and just sat and hung out in this area that they wanted to be diverse, and this idea of a global village where everyone's living peacefully together. And I thought it was a really visible sign of what we want to happen, because so often protesters and people who are critical of the government are labeled as, you know, anti-everything. And I think sometimes it is really hard for us to envision what we want instead of what we don't want, because it's easy to see something that you don't like. But I was really impressed this year by the creativity and the energy of people envisioning what they did want.
Do you feel that the protest was a good means to raise awareness about the role the school plays in Latin America?
Yeah, I think that that's the reason, one of the main reasons that I go down, is because I think that large mass movements like that are one of the only ways to get press attention, and then for the whole country to find out what's going on. And since I've been going for the past 4 years, it's been interesting to see how more and more people, just even in this college community here in St. Joseph, have found out so much more about the School of the Americas, and how it's become a national issue, whereas 4 years ago, I don't think anyone knew about it.
It seems rather ridiculous, the amount of time that some spend in prison as a result of trespassing onto the grounds of the school. Just recently, half of the protesters arrested from the November 2000 vigil were released from federal prisons. Many of them received the maximum 6 months in prison, and among the arrested were a senior NASA research scientist and an 89-year-old Catholic nun. How can such lengthy prison terms be justified for simple trespassing? We're doing something nonviolent that these people strongly believe in.
A lot of us feel that the prison terms are definitely unfair and way too lengthy for what these people are doing, which is to speak out against their government and to make a political symbol of their trespass.
Right.
But, I mean, I guess this judge I think it's the same judge who sees all of these cases and is known for giving maximum sentences. So people know what they're getting into when they commit the action, because they know it's likely that they'll see this judge and then get this maximum sentence. But I still think it's rather ridiculous as well. Now they have the excuse of talking about national security and saying that, you know, our action on that base kept, you know, might weaken their security or weaken their vigilance and make some big national security difference. But when it comes down to it, they've been giving these sentences, the same sentences before this event happened. I think that the main reason to go to jail is to get media coverage and for those people to be able to say their piece and be listened to in a different way than they would, you know, just writing letters to their representatives. I think they're definitely making a sacrifice for the cause, but it's a sacrifice they want and are willing to make, and I think makes a big difference in their lives. I don't see it as a negative thing at all.
What do you believe will be the result following the closure of the School of the Americas?
I think that most people who support the closing of the school understand that the same things are probably going to go on after the school closes. It just won't be as official, and it won't be a school with a name and a face and such a visible symbol of what's going on. And I think I would hope that most of us would still be working to stop those things and to stop those funds and to stop all the training that would probably still be going on, just less officially. But I think it will be harder to see. But at the same time, we know that there's this big symbol of what's going on. And to have that be so out in the open and so accepted is kind of disgusting, that we can point to the School of the Americas, and it's the face of all this horror that's going on, and people are still allowing that face to be seen. So I think even though we know that the school closing won't solve all the problems, we still want to close the school and then hopefully continue to work towards fixing the U.S. foreign policy, and especially down in Central and South America. And I think it's really cool to see this mobilization of people. I think the School of the Americas issue has been one recent issue that's allowed so many people to mobilize and just gotten a lot of people interested and educated about what's going on with U.S. foreign policy in general. And I think that in turn carries over to all these other issues like the IMF and the World Bank. And I think that once people are mobilized, even when the School of the Americas issue itself is at least on the surface gone, I think those same group of people, since they're already mobilized and we already have these networks of communication, can continue to work on other issues.
Many other issues come up every day about social justice in Latin America. Many times it is not so easy to see the United States' ties to human rights violations. Under the Pinochet military dictatorship in Chile years ago, the CIA trained the secret police, which is responsible for the deaths and disappearances of tens of thousands of Chileans. When Nicaraguan civilians were forced to take up arms against the tyrannic Somoza family, they were dubbed Marxist guerrillas. Under the Reagan administration, it is the freedom fighters and the Contra Wars. Again, the use of language aimed at creating a false impression of reality in the public mind. When Congress became aware of the nature of this operation, they forbade funding for this terrible cause. The Reagan administration then turned it into an illegitimate underground network, which resulted in the Iran-Contra scandal of the mid-1980s. Unfortunately, these cases are common in the recent history of a handful of Latin American countries. It is cases such as these which we must strive to educate ourselves on, so that environments for social injustice cannot be created anywhere. Some more recent cases are the rise of the Zapatistas in Mexico, who once again are on the verge of being displaced or assassinated by the federal government and paramilitaries over a land dispute. Also in Colombia, plans to retake the land that was appropriated to peasants and farmers a number of years ago has helped to rekindle the ongoing civil war between these guerrillas, who are now being marked as terrorists. Again, the use of language shaping our sense of reality and also attempting to justify the war against them. The war has long been perpetuated by the Colombian military and paramilitaries being backed by the United States with supplies, helicopters, training, and now a share of intelligence, which puts these guerrilla land reformers at a great disadvantage. Eric LeCompte of the School of the Americas Watch in D.C. has recently taken a trip to Colombia. He tells us of his experience there.
Myself and other human rights advocates connected with SOA Watch and other human rights organizations traveled this past July to Colombia. We went there to witness firsthand what these graduates of the U.S. Army School of the Americas have done. We met people in Colombia who had been tortured at the hands of graduates of the School of the Americas. We also went into a town called El Tigre. On our way to this town, on our way to El Tigre, we would see signs spray painted on the walls in Spanish that translated to "El Tigre will be wiped off the map." El Tigre is located in one of the southernmost departments of Colombia, Putumayo. It's an Amazon region. It's a very important region for the United States government and other first world countries because of the rich petroleum that's available, the rich oil that's available in the southern region of Putumayo. And so we traveled to this town of El Tigre, seeing these signs that El Tigre will be wiped off the map. And when we came into the town, more than 100 people were gathered and waiting to meet with us. We had to ask permission from the paramilitaries. Right-wing groups who work very closely with the Colombian military often have access to U.S. funding, who now control this town. And the paramilitaries, along with the Colombian military, are responsible for the vast majority of human rights abuses in Colombia. And so we went into this town after asking permission to meet with these people, and these people were able to talk with us about the fumigation that was going on, a policy under Plan Colombia, sponsored by the U.S. government, where planes rained down a herbicide called glyphosate, produced by the Monsanto company. And the people in this town were able to tell us how this glyphosate had destroyed most of their subsistence food crops. The people in this town were able to show us their children with rashes, devastating rashes all over their bodies that had been caused by this aerial spraying to destroy the illicit coca crop. Unfortunately, according to the governor's authority in Putumayo, over half of what has been destroyed has not been the illicit coca crop. Over half of what has been destroyed has been people's subsistence food crops. So the campesinos, the farmers of this town, were able to share with us what happened, able to share with us their stories about the terrible aerial fumigation. But the people in this town, after showing us their children, they could not tell us what happened in their town just 2 years before. They could not even mention the signs that we saw leading into this town that El Tigre will be wiped off the map because of the Ley de Silencio, or the Law of Silence in Colombia. And what that means is that you can't say anything that would upset any of the armed actors in Colombia, neither the Colombian military or the paramilitaries or the left-wing guerrillas, because if you do, you will be killed. You'll pay a very dear price with your life. And what they couldn't tell us was the terrible tragedy that befell their town 2 years ago. They could talk about the fumigation. They could show us their children, because both the paramilitaries and the guerrillas have called the fumigation a travesty and something that should be stopped. But they can't tell us how the right-wing paramilitaries are wanting to take back the southern region from the guerrillas, how they came into the town of El Tigre on a warm day, came into the town, gathered all of the citizens of the town in the center of town, and took 35 people and with machetes cut them from their necks down to their stomachs, pulling out their intestines, all of their innards, and throwing their bodies into the river that ran through the town. The river was so red that the children in the town called it El Rio de Sangre, the river of blood, and for days the bodies washed up on the shore. Also, before the paramilitaries left this town, they took 11 more people, 11 more campesinos, 11 more leaders from this town, and brought them into the jungle, where they were disappeared, never to be heard from again. This is what the paramilitaries did that day, that they can't talk about, the campesinos cannot talk about, or they will be killed. And we asked, where was the Colombian military throughout all of this? Where was the Colombian military that was supposed to protect you? And what we found from the person who was able to share this story with us is that the Colombian military was there, that they had blocked off the main road going into the town. They had blocked it off from each side so no one could come in or no one could get out. The people were trapped by the Colombian military. And who were the officers in charge of this Colombian battalion? Unfortunately, the officers in charge were graduates of the U.S. Army School of the Americas, located in Fort Benning, Georgia. So we returned to the United States with these additional human rights atrocities, and massacres documented, with a greater need to close this school of terror, sooner than ever, because it's people, it's campesinos, it's farmers, it's union organizers, it's teachers who are experiencing this terrorism daily from these graduates of the U.S. Army School of the Americas. Unfortunately, a training that's provided to these soldiers that's paid for by our tax dollars.
As you've stated, these former graduates of the School of the Americas have been well documented on their human rights violations for decades. Often the victims are landless peasants desiring agrarian reform just for subsistence. How can this apparent perpetuation of terrorism be ethical considering the current war on terrorism?
I don't believe it can be ethical. Right now it's purely hypocritical. If the Bush administration is serious about a war on terrorism, we need to start in our own backyard, and we need to close a school of terror that has led to the assassination and massacre of hundreds of thousands of people in Latin America. One of the most famous graduates of the U.S. Army School of the Americas is Hector Gramajo. Hector Gramajo, as well as Rios Montt. Both of these men graduated from the school, and they returned to Guatemala, where in the early 1980s, they orchestrated a plan of repression that assassinated hundreds of thousands of people, or disappeared hundreds of thousands of people throughout Guatemala. They targeted union leaders and teachers and student leaders. All these people were killed. Many people were killed for nothing more than wanting to learn to read, wanting the same basic rights that we all want in terms of clean water, in terms of a roof over our head. And these people were organizing for this, and they were killed. And the graduates responsible, again, graduates of the School of the Americas, Hector Gramajo and Rios Montt, and our tax money paid for their training. So what we have found is that many of these graduates are notorious and that they've been committing terrorism since 1946 all through Latin America. And unfortunately, we found that union leaders have been specifically targeted. In 1996, the Pentagon was forced to release training manuals used at the SOA. These manuals, we found, advocated interrogation techniques such as torture, execution, and blackmail. According to these manuals, these techniques should be used on those who do union organizing or recruiting, those who pass out propaganda in favor of the interests of workers, those who sympathize with demonstrators or strikes, or those who make accusations that the government has failed to meet the basic needs of the people. And unfortunately, we found that the graduates of the U.S. Army School of the Americas learned these lessons too well, because they've gone back to their country. And even in the past few years, in the early 1990s, we found many, many union organizers and leaders being killed in Colombia by graduates who received this training at the U.S. Army School of the America, by Colombian soldiers. One example, 20 striking banana workers were brutally murdered, their throats slit. 8 of the 11 Colombian military officers cited for the slayings were SOA graduates. Union members tortured. Unionist Maria Cristina Gomez and Miguel Lazo Quintanilla were two of the labor leaders targeted for torture and murder by members of the Colombian Air Force. SOA graduate Juan Rafael Bustillo commanded the troops cited. And unfortunately, the examples go on and on. We found that these soldiers who have come to the United States to receive this training, after they've received this advanced training, have returned home to their countries, returned home to El Salvador and to Colombia and Bolivia, and really committed the worst human rights violations and atrocities in Latin American history.
Do you think the recent experience with terrorism in the United States has helped people become more informed on global issues, specifically those dealing with the School of the Americas and its functions?
Well, what we've found is that more and more people here in the United States have become aware of the School of the Americas in light of the terrible tragedies of September 11th. The New York Times, the Manchester Guardian, big publications across the United States have begun to look at this training camp for terror in our own backyard, the School of the Americas at Fort Benning. And we found that more and more papers across the country have been writing editorials about this school, calling for its closure. We're finding that we're continuing to build momentum in Congress, and that church people and union people are getting involved in this issue more than ever before. And unfortunately, so much of the reason for that are these terrible tragedies that took place on September 11th, that people started to look at this training camp for terror in our own backyard and wanted to address it. So we have found that people have been more receptive to learning about this institution and seeing how this School of the Americas, this School of Terror is paid for with our tax dollars. And people have been saying, this isn't right for our tax dollars to be spent this way. This School of Terror must close. A School of Terror and Torture isn't right if it's located in Afghanistan, and it's not right if it's located at Fort Benning, Georgia.
There's going to be a gathering in Washington, D.C. very soon to raise awareness about the war in Colombia and the School of the Americas. Can you tell us a bit about that?
That's right. April 19th through the 22nd, thousands of people will be descending upon Washington, D.C. to continue our legislative efforts to call for a closure of the U.S. Army School of the Americas. Thousands of people will visit their members of Congress over that day, inviting them to sign on to H.R. 1810. In addition to that, many other human rights organizations will join SOA Watch in Washington, D.C. that weekend to focus on the terrible, terrible civil war that's happening in Colombia, to focus on the plight of the people in Colombia. More graduates of the School of the Americas have been trained from Colombia than any other country in Latin America, more than Nicaragua or Panama. Colombia tops the charts with more than 10,000 graduates of this kind of terror training. So it makes a lot of sense with the heightened civil war that's going on in Colombia right now for us to really focus our efforts on stopping military aid to this country and for stopping all military training to this country, a country where the Colombian military has one of the worst human rights abuses in the hemisphere. So throughout the weekend of April 19th to the 22nd, thousands of people will descend upon Washington to march, to raise their voices, and to call on the Congress to close this school and shout to the top of the Capitol, no more terror in our name.
What are some common questions that people ask you about the school?
People ask, why is this School of Terror in operation? It seems so wrong when people hear about it. They can't understand how or why the U.S. government would be involved in this. They can't understand why our tax dollars would be wrapped up in teaching torture and teaching psychological operations to thugs in Latin America. And I think the answer is complicated, but I think what we're finding more and more is that there are many U.S. corporations that really depend on this kind of military training. And I think one example is NAFTA. Hours after NAFTA went into effect, Mexican workers rose up to say no. The Mexican people in the southern region of Chiapas said that NAFTA will affect the prices for our food subsidies. NAFTA is something that will really, really hurt and further impoverish the people of southern Mexico. And right away, as these people were rising up and saying no, saying ya basta, enough already, the Mexican military moved in immediately with troops, helicopters, and artillery. At least 13 of the high-level officers who instigated this plan of repression on the people in Mexico in 1994, at least 13 of these high-level officers were trained at the U.S. Army School of the Americas. What we're finding more and more is that SOA soldiers are trained to protect the interests of U.S. corporations and maintain the economic status quo for a few rich and powerful. Just as SOA muscle has been used to beat down labor organizing under NAFTA, it's inevitable that the same military enforcement will be used in full force when the FTAA, the Free Trade Area of the Americas, comes into full effect. And unfortunately, it's more than just the training, which really illustrates the reality of this. We've also found time and time again that in the actual resource materials used by the school, it teaches graduates, open quotes, to protect the strategic supply of natural resources throughout Latin America. That's what soldiers are being taught to do, and they're being taught to do it with training that shows them to target religious leaders, to target human rights advocates, to target union organizers, those who would say, our people here in these countries deserve to have clean water. Our people here in these countries deserve to have a roof over their head. We deserve to have food. And for making those requests, too often, they face the barrel of a gun of a graduate of the U.S. Army School of the Americas.
What would you suggest for those who would like to become active on this topic?
We are looking within the next months for a bill to be introduced in the Senate. We do have a bill right now in the House of Representatives, H.R. 1810, and we'd really encourage folks who are listening to this program to call their congressperson, call their members of Congress, and either thank them for sponsoring this piece of important human rights legislation or encourage them to sponsor it. Because now more than ever, in light of the terrible tragedies of this past September, we need to raise a united voice and support our members of Congress who are calling for this terror camp to be closed.
You can obtain information on how to contact representatives from the School of the Americas Watch website, which is located at soaw.org. I would like to thank my guests Merle Nolde, Rachel Castor, and Eric LeCompte. This feature was written and produced by myself, Michael Chouinard, at KVSC Studios in St. Cloud, Minnesota. Music for this feature was provided by Aaron Corday in Part 1, and for this part, it is Snowboy in the Latin section. Thanks for joining us.
In Washington, D.C., from April 19th through 22nd, the School of America's Watch and a coalition of other groups have planned a series of marches, direct actions, and teach-ins calling for the closure of the School of the Americas and an end to war in Colombia and elsewhere, including Bush's War Without End. For more information, you can visit the School of America's Watch website at www.soawatch.org or the Mobilization Against Plan Colombia at www.columbiamobilization.org. These actions are targeted against the School of America's, the IMF and World Bank, and Plan Colombia. A number of vans will be going to Washington, D.C. from the Finger Lakes. For information on transportation and housing to the protests, you can contact Marcy Lay at area code 607-272-9630. 607-272-9630 or 255-7293. There are also some bus trip tickets available for the D.C. Peace March and Rally on the 20th. These tickets are $36, and they are available at Green Star Food Co-op, the ABC Cafe, and Autumn Leaves Used Books in Ithaca. For more information, you can call Jim at area code 607-533-4727 or 227-4727. Some scholarships for the bus ride are available. Donations for scholarships are welcome at the ticket sale locations.
You see injustice all around, yet have not the courage or the will to fight or stand your ground. We see but are too scared. There are not enough of us prepared to put our lives at risk time and again. And then comes a drop of rain to the parched lips of a world that needs to feel hope again. Dying as a people and a nation. A third of our people have been killed in 21 years of illegal occupation. 10 UN resolutions requesting Indonesia to withdraw. They chose to ignore. If you are really human, you'll stop them sending these weapons to our shores. With my hammer, I break the chain. I will not remain in silence. I will stand and I will defend my right to fight against violence. No prison can contain the freedom that we gain when we move through fear. Laws of our civilized land are quite clear. Selling weapons to dictators who murder starve. Rape and torture is illegal. But there is timber, there is oil on Indonesian soil, and there's money to be made from the arms trade. Our boys need jobs, you shout it from the rooftops, but not one word of the lives lost or destroyed. I cannot believe
you continue. You're listening to Unwelcome Guests on WEOS Geneva or WXXE Fenner, Syracuse. Native peoples throughout the globe are facing extinction due to the greed of mining and oil companies. As the energy crisis intensifies, their plight sounds the alarm to all those concerned about the prospect of global warming, genocide, and eco-disasters. Al Giedix is professor of sociology at the University of Wisconsin, La Crosse, and a longtime activist in environmental and native solidarity movements in the upper Midwest. He is executive director of the Wisconsin Resources Protection Council and director of the Center for Alternative Mining Development Policy. Al Giedix is the author of The New Resource Wars, Native and Environmental Struggles Against Multinational Corporations, and more recently, Resource Rebels. Resource Rebels traces the development of transnational movements in the U.S., Asia, Africa, and Latin America that are countering resource extraction and providing direction for environmentalists and anti-capitalists alike. Al Giedix was recently interviewed on Free Radio Santa Cruz on the program Roots and Culture with Max Boykoff and Alan Graves.